And I saw this sign on this house in the same neighborhood. It was a nice little neighborhood, same neighborhood for sale. And I went over and I said, don't you want to rent it? He says, I can't. I'm about to lose it. I got to sell it. I'm trying to get a little equity out of it. So that's why he let me have it for $300 down, because he wanted to sell it before they foreclosed on him, you know. And I could see, well, I can rent out the rooms for $5 a week. Let me see. Was it $5 a week? Yeah, $5 a week. That's, or was it more than that? No, $9 a week. $9 a week. I could rent. The rooms had gone up then. $9 a week. And and my payments were only $18. So $9 a week, that's $36 right there. And I said, oh, I can just rent out a room. I'll keep up my payments. And I'll get a job. I just knew I was going to get a job, but I didn't have one at that time. But I didn't try to buy the property in my name, because I knew they wouldn't sell it to me since I didn't have a job. And I bought it in my parents' name, and they already had their home paid for. So the people selling it to them thought they were good risk, because they already had their home paid for, you know. So I bought it in their name. Then later they transferred it to my name when I paid them back. But I wouldn't let them give me the money. I just said, no, I'm going to do this on my own. Not that they had it to give me, but Papa would have found a way if I'd have really needed it, you know, because he was always nice like that. And
did you ever go, I know you worked on Central Avenue in the theaters, and that Central Avenue became, you know, very big center for entertainment and place to go. What do you remember about that?
Oh, yeah, that Club Alabama, that was the place to go. And that's where lots of people went for amusements, and the theaters, you know. And they had lots of little nightclubs there. But, you know, let's see, I was working at the theater, and then the theater closed, had to close for some, renovation. The theater had to close. When I was working at the Tivoli Theater, it had to close for renovation. So that put me looking for another job. So I got a job as a demonstrator for Kraft Cheese Company. Something, did you see something crawling on my eye? Seems like I feel something crawling right on my eye.
I don't see anything. Want me to take a pause here?
The theater closed, and so I called Betty Hill. We had a political study club. Oh, and I was president of the political study club. I was a junior president. And that was trying to get jobs opened up for colored boys and girls who'd finished college. Mrs. Betty Hill, she was an uneducated woman as far as book learning was concerned, but she had good old common sense. And she had a way with these politicians, you know. She could go down and talk them into hiring colored if you were qualified, but she wanted to make sure you were qualified. She wouldn't say hire someone who's not qualified. She wanted to make sure you qualified. So anyway, I called Betty Hill up and I said, Miss Hill, I need a job. Although in the meantime, by the time all this happened, I had gone back to school and finished high school, and so I was only a high school graduate. And so I told Betty Hill I wanted a job. She said, well, Vernon, you're just a high school graduate. I cannot get you a political job because you have to be more qualified. And she said, oh, but they're having a home show out of Pan Pacific Auditorium, and they need somebody for 10 days to work with a lady in a glass house. Would you like that? And they pay $3 a day. I said, sure. So I went to work for this lady for 10 days, $3 a day. That's $30 I'm going to make. People were offering you like $6 a week to work in the little stores that they had on Central Avenue where you could get a job. They'd want you to work all week for $6. And so $3 a day, that was a good job, you know. And 10 days, I could do lots with that $30. And so I took it, and I was working with this lady in this glass house. She was advertising food products like Kraft products and Pillsbury's products and A1 Globe A1 flour, all the different companies' food products. She had this glass house, and we'd be cooking every day and using some of these projects and products. And the public would stand outside the glass house and watch us and see what we were using. So it was a form of advertisement. And so while I'm working with her in this glass house, when I was dressed up real cute, she let me wear a little plaid dress that I had made. I had taken sewing in school, and I'd made myself a cute little plaid dress. And then I had a white little white apron to go over this little plaid dress, a little white headband to wear. A little maid outfit, but on the dress was plaid. It wasn't black and white, you know, because I didn't like black on me. And she was very nice, and she said, "Well, if you don't like black, I don't care what you wear, just as long as you look nice." So I had this cute little plaid dress, and I just put a little white apron over and a little cap. And so everybody thought I looked so cute. And so the man from Kraft Cheese Company came in one day. He came in the house. See, she'd let the people from the companies come inside the house, but the public had to stand outside and watch us. And so I decided, she'd let me make whatever I wanted to make, whatever food you want to work with today, work with whatever you want to work with. So I decided I want to make these cookies with Philadelphia cream cheese out of Kraft products, and because they sounded so interesting. And so I was making the cookies. And this man from Kraft Cheese Company, and while I was making the cookies, I just say I always had a guiding angel, because I didn't know the man and he didn't know me, but it just so happens that he came in at the time I was working with his products. And so he kept watching me, and he stayed there until I made the cookies and cooked them and served them. That was at least 45 minutes took me to do that, because I was doing other things while I'm making the cookies, too. I'm making that and something else, too, you know, because I had to keep busy all the time. And so when I served those cookies and he tasted, oh, they were so delicious. And he thought I was an excellent cook. All I was doing was following the recipes. And so he got real interested. He came back in the kitchen and he says, oh, these are delicious. What did you? He still hasn't told me he's from Kraft Cheese Company. What did you make these out of? And I said, Philadelphia cream cheese. And I opened the packet and showed it to him, you know. And I said, this is the best cheese on the market. I'm just boosting Kraft Cheese product. He said I was a natural born salesman, you know. And so pretty soon he pulls out his card and gives it to me. And I said, what, you're from Kraft Cheese Company? He said, yes. I said, oh, I'd love to have a job with your company. I said, you know, I'm looking for a job. I'm just working here temporarily. He said, what would you like to do? I said, I'd like to be a demonstrator. I used to see the white girls demonstrating in the colored neighborhoods, you know, giving out little samples of things. In the grocery stores. And so, but they weren't hiring any colored girls to do that, you know. And that's what I decided I wanted to do. So I told him, that's what I'd like to do. He said, you would? He said, I said, yes, I would. He said, well, you're a natural born salesman. I bet you would be good. And so he said, call me in a month. We got a new project coming out. That was parquet oleomargarine. It hadn't come out yet. And this was in 1938, I think it was. And he said, we're going to have this new project coming out, and we're going to have lots of money to spend for advertisement, and we're going to have new demonstrators by the week. And he says, I'll have a job for you. So you call me up in a month. So 2 weeks passed, and I hadn't called him, because he said, call him in a month. So 2 weeks passed, he called me. I thought you were going to call me. I said, well, you told me to call you in a month. I said, it's only been 2 weeks. He said, well, can you come down right now? And I was in the bathtub, taking a bath, getting ready to get dressed to go out and look for a job. And he called me just at that time. And I rushed and got dressed and went down there and got the job. And he said, we got a home economist from Chicago coming out to make a movie. And then they advertise the commercials like we get on TV. They advertise them in the theaters then. And they had to make a movie to show this commercial in the TV with the movies and the movie houses, because we didn't have TVs then. So we were making a commercial for the movies, and we're just dealing with foods, and this home economist was coming out to make this movie, and I was her helper, so he hired me to be her helper, and we worked at the studio, and he gave me a company car to pick her up every day. She's staying at the Hollywood Hotel, and I'm living on the east side in this house I bought for $2,100, and so I had the company car, Kraft Cheese Company, and they let me keep it. You know, I kept it at nights, and because I'd have to go early every morning to pick her up and go to the studio. And so, and then when I needed gas, I'd go to the company office, and they'd fill it up and clean the car, you know. And, oh, I was a big shot driving the Kraft Cheese Company car, taking her to work every day and working with her in the movie. But only our hands were showing. We weren't showing, just our hands, you know. And we made some beautiful foods, and I learned lots more about following recipes, you know. And I worked for a whole month out there. We were a whole month making that. And I got $30 a week. At first, they were just paying me. They started me off working as $18 a week as a demonstrator in the stores. I was making $18 a week. And he put me out there with her. And was just still giving me the same 18. So the white girls that I was working with, they found out that I was just making $18. And they said, well, girl, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be getting as much as we get. We're getting $30 a week. And you shouldn't be working for $18. And so I went. So this man who had hired me, he was always bragging about how good I was, you know. What a good salesman I was, and how everybody liked me. I said, well, Mr. Rowe, I think his name was Rowe. I've almost forgotten his name. But I'll just say his name was Mr. Rowe. Mr. Rowe, if I'm all that good, then why can't you pay me $30 a week like the other girls are getting? Oh, boy. Yeah, it really was. He just made me a good opening, you know, for me to bring that up. Because I was so timid. I was so glad to have this job for $18 a week, and I wasn't going to complain. So he turned so red, but he laughed, you know. He said, well, Verna, I got to give it to you. I said, well, the other girls are getting it. I'm doing as much as they are, more. I'm doing more than they are, because I'm going back picking up the lady every day, bringing her to work, you know. And because those girls didn't have to pick up anybody and bring them to work, you know. And so he gave it to me. But when I went back to demonstrating, he gave me $21 a week. And I kept that job for a year. It lasted a year. See, when that money ran out, then the job played out. Cause they just
demonstrating the new product?
Yeah. Well, not everything. They had me selling everything. But they were pushing the new product, parquet. But they also had me giving out samples of cheese, too. And so I'd give out samples of the cheese and the...
How would you do it? Did you have a...
I had a little stand. They set up a little booth, like, and dress it up with all the advertisements and literature and stuff. It was a cute little display, you know, big display. The company would make a nice display. And I'd be dressed in I have a picture of myself someplace around here I had on a white uniform. And then I had cute little trays. I could fix it in a way I wanted. And I'd fix up the little trays dainty and serve give out the samples as people come along. Have a sample of a new margarine called parquet. It's not made with soybean oil. Oh, wait, now let's see. It's not made with, what was it made out of then? Coconut oil. Not made with coconut oil. This is made with vegetable oil. It's healthier for you because, you see, the vegetable oils were better for you than they were making it out of some old stuff like coconut oil. And it wasn't as digestible as the vegetable oil, you know. And it was for 20 cents a pound, and the other margarines were selling for 10 cents a pound. So I had to do lots of talking to get them to pay twice as much, you know. and they would usually buy it because I was such a nice salesman, and I was a colored salesman too. And they're trying to help me out, you know. And then they'd put cheese there. And I'd give out samples of cheese. And they'd push whatever cheese they wanted to push. Velveeta. They were pushing Velveeta. And the people would usually buy it. And I'd show them where it's better, which was true. It was better for them to buy the better grade. You know, just like now you don't buy. Oh, I know the other oleos were made out of animal fat and this coconut oil, but the vegetable oil was better for you, more digestible, you know, which is a fact. It's a known fact, you know, that's true, you know. That's why a lot of people have hardening of the arteries. They use too much animal fat, and your arteries get clogged up. So it was really a good health point that I was bringing out. And so by that time, by the time that job played out, that's the time this man had talked me into studying real estate. Or did I have my grocery store for? Oh, I see, from this demonstrating job, from being a demonstrator.
Can you hold on 1 second?
Surely.
Okay, this is a good. It's going now. Okay, this is tape 2 with Verna Williams.
So when the, ready? So when the Kraft cheese company demonstration job ended, I had been demonstrating in this market, the fish market there at Vernon and Central. So this man who had the master lease on the building, he thought too that I was a good salesman. So he said, Verna, why don't you take over this little grocery concession here. He had that divided up into 4 businesses. One building, he had a meat department, a vegetable department, fish department, and a grocery department. And the man with the grocery department, he had an old sour expression on his face, and he wasn't doing much good, you know. So he says he wants to sell out because he can't make it being a grocery clerk. And I said, well, I don't have much money. How much does he want? He said, well, you just buy his merchandise from him. You don't have to pay him anything for his business because he doesn't have any business. And so he had about $500 worth of merchandise, but that wasn't enough to run a successful grocery store. And I said, well, I have a little money, but I don't know. How much is the rent? He said, $35 a month for that concession. He said, but you can pay me at the end of the month. You don't have to pay me in advance because I'd like to have you in there. And so I said, okay, I'll take it. Because I wasn't working then, and I had just gotten my real estate license, but I hadn't started trying to sell. I just decided, well, bird in hand's worth two in the bush, and I was timid, you know, about this real estate business because you didn't make any money if you didn't make a sale, you know. I didn't know it was so good. And I said, okay, I'll take it. So I went and bought the man out $500 worth of his merchandise. And instead of me taking money out every day when I make a sale, I'd go buy more merchandise. And pretty soon, in about 2 weeks, I had my supplies built up to anything you wanted in a grocery store, I had it. If I had to go to the wholesale house twice a day, I'd have it, because I didn't want to ever say I'm out of something, because I had gotten this idea that most colored people run a business, they don't know what they're doing. They never have anything. They're always out, just out, just out. And I said, I don't want to ever tell anybody I'm out. And I had bought a little station wagon, and so I had a station wagon. And the delivery trucks only came once a week. I couldn't wait once a week, because my little store was small, and I couldn't buy a whole lot because I didn't have much storage space, you know. And I'd buy 5 cases at a time. If I'd had more storage space, I'd have bought 10 cases at a time. It would have been cheaper. But even 5 is cheaper than buying 1 case at a time, you know. So I'd buy 5 case lots of stuff so I could get a little cheaper. And I had to keep some of it at home because my little storage space wasn't large enough down there, you know. And so it really worked me hard because I had to move the stuff twice, you know. But I could see that I'm not going to make any money unless I buy in bigger quantities, you know. And keep from being out, I'm going to run to the store and sold a wholesale house and get stuff myself. And so I did that. And so I got the reputation of having everything anytime you want it. She's never out. She's always got what you want. And the bread men were so nice and friendly. I was friendly with them because, see, from being a demonstrator, I picked up on lots of little pointers for running a successful business. When I was demonstrating, giving out samples, the bread men would come in the store with their arms full of bread, and those old managers would make them stand there and hold that bread till they finished talking to a friend. It wasn't business, you know, just talking to a friend, just, oh, you're beneath me, you can wait, you know, that attitude. And I used to feel so sorry for those bread men, because they were cursing under their breath that these managers being so inconsiderate of them, you know. So I picked up on that. So when I got my old store, if the bread man came, I would quit waiting on a customer to count the bread, because he's supposed to let you count it before he puts it on the shelf. And so I would tell the customer, and the customers didn't mind waiting because it didn't take me that long to count, you know. I said, pardon me just a minute, just help yourself decide what you want while I count this bread. And nobody ever got offended at me doing that. And the bread men were so appreciative of that. And they started changing my bread every day. I never had any old bread. I always had fresh bread. And so I got the reputation of having fresh bread. You know, some stores you buy bread, it's old, stale. And you call yourself getting a fresh loaf of bread, and it's not fresh. And so they said, oh, she's always has nice fresh bread there and fresh eggs. I was lucky on the eggs, too. But anyway, the bread man would change my bread every day. And so I got so I'd sell out bread, because the fish market was the drawing card. They flew their fish in from Louisiana. And they advertised fresh fish flown in daily from Louisiana. So people would come from all over town just to buy the fish. Well, when they found out that my prices were the same in my little grocery concession as they were in the big stores, well, they'd trade with me. So I had so much business I couldn't hardly handle it because my little place was so little, you know.
What year was this?
44. I mean, 42. 1942. That was during the war. And so I couldn't get any men to work for me because they were all going to the army. So I had to get a girl. And this girl, the same as ours, we couldn't lift two heavy things. We'd have to do it together, you know, like a case of pineapple, a case of vegetables, a case of juice, a case of anything. It's heavy for a woman to lift, you know. So we'd find ourselves lifting it together, you know, to put it on display for sale. And so it was very hard work. But I said, well, I was getting to make good money because I started making like $100 a week for myself. And that's the most money I'd ever made, you know, in a week for myself. And because I hadn't gone in real estate yet, you know. And I said, well, I gotta stand it for a little longer. So I stood it until I got me a good nest egg. I saved up about $5,000. And then I decided, well, I'm going to kill myself doing all this hard work because I was beginning to feel so tired. Didn't feel like doing anything else. And so a man came along and wanted to buy it, and I sold him the business. And then I already had my real estate license. So that's when I went to this black millionaire's office because he used to be a customer in there. He'd come over there to buy that fresh fish. So that's how I met him. See, he'd come in there all the time, and we'd talk, you know, and I told him I had license, but I wasn't working at it yet, and he'd always tell me, well, when you get ready to work. Yeah, Maddox, yeah. Uh-huh. So I told him I had license. I said, but I haven't started working in real estate yet. He said, well, you ought to come on and work for me. When you get ready to come and work, come and work for me. And so when I sold the business, I went over to see him, and sure enough, he gave me the job. And so I worked there until I decided, well, I better go on the west side, because all he had, he wasn't so interested in listings. He was interested in speculating, because he always had plenty of money. And if I'd get a listing on something, it was good. He'd buy it. I didn't get a chance to sell it and make more commission. By him buying it, I wouldn't make as much, you see. So I figured I was holding myself back by staying with him. So one day I was driving up Jefferson near the church I attended. I attended the church on Jefferson and 3rd Avenue, Westminster Presbyterian Church. And all of a sudden, I got to 4th Avenue in Jefferson. I looked over there and I saw that neat little real estate office was a Japanese company. And I put on my brakes all of a sudden and stopped. I said, I'm going to go in here and see if they don't need a salesman. And I went in there and talked to them, and they said, yeah, we'd like to have a black sales lady. They didn't have any blacks. They just had all Japanese in there. And so I started working with them. And they were so nice. And you see, if you get a listing then, what he would advertise, and you'd sell your listing, because he wasn't a speculator like Maddox was, you see. So I started making much more money by working for him. And I'm still with him. I've been with him since, 56. I started working with him at 56. I still have my license with him. But since I've been doing this movie work, I haven't been concentrating on real estate as much, you know.
Movie work?
Yeah. Yeah, I do extra work in the movies. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What's that?
You know, like when you see a movie star talking, you see whole lots of people in the background moving. Those are what you call extras, you know. So I've been an extra for a long time. I've been doing that. And I was on Live in Color. Do you ever look at that? That's a comedy on Sunday nights. About three Sunday nights ago, they had my picture. Not this new one, but the old pictures that I had of myself.
A portrait?
Uh-huh, on a placard. You know, they had these placards with Bush and Clinton, all the candidates that's running for election now and making jokes about them, you know. Then they had my picture on a placard. And I've been established with them as Mrs. Perkins. And I think she said, I wonder what Mrs. Perkins think about these. But it was something comical, she said. I'm not sure what she said. But was anyway, she was just wondering about what I thought about these candidates, you know. And it was so cute. That she's so comical. And I was in one scene with Live in Color where I was Mrs. Perkins and some money was missing. And I was chairman, I was Mrs. Perkins, who was chairman of this committee where the money was missing. And they were accusing a certain fellow of taking the money. This is all comedy, you know. Choosing a certain fellow for taking the money, and he kept saying it wasn't him, you know. And then finally somebody said, well, what about Mrs. Perkins? She's chairman of the committee. Maybe Mrs. Perkins took it. And so this comedian woman, you know, she is so clever. Oh, no, not Miss Perkins. Oh, no, she just fell out when they accused me of taking this money. And then she's doing all this praising about me being such a fine woman. Then the next breath, but don't you go in the house. Don't you go in the house. Boy, the cockroaches there and the dust. Oh, I was a filthy house. She's talking. She's one of these kind. She's going to say something nice about you, but she's still got to gossip about you, you know. And it was so funny, but
Do you ever get speaking parts, or you just sort of, how do you get these jobs?
Oh, by calling the casting company, different casting companies, they've got lots of casting companies here, and you register with them. I'm registered with several of them, and that one. Let me see, how did I get that? Well, one of the casting companies called me on that one. I think it was Central Casting that called me on that one. And I got a commercial with McDonald's once, too. I have an agent, so, for that. And I got a big commercial with McDonald's, and that was nationwide. A lady in Chicago, one in New York called me and said they saw me on TV. That was a year ago in April 1990, when I made that commercial. And I had speaking words and lines in that, and I got a big price for that. I got residuals from you, from that, you know.
How did you get into this?
A Japanese lady stopped me. You know, I've been lucky with Japanese people. My first job I had was by a Japanese man that had this little theater. And then I was most successful with Maddox because I speculated there. But I did very good when I started working with Saito Realtor, that's the Japanese broker that I work with. And this Japanese lady used to come in the office all the time for other businesses. And so the casting companies used to call her and tell her to bring me 10 people. Bring me 3 colored and 3 Chinese and 3 Japanese and Mexicans, all different races, they tell her to bring them, you know. So she came in one day and asked me, would I like to go and work with her, because they told her to bring some colored people, and so I was the type that they wanted, you know. So I went with her and worked. That's what got me started, you know.
When was that?
Oh, that was like 1957.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you've been doing this a long time?
Yeah, just bits and parts. I wasn't concentrating on it then like I am now. So, you know, after I got older, I decided, well, maybe I better slow down. My kids keep telling me, don't work so hard. We can take care of ourselves now. You don't need to work so hard now. Because they all feel they're capable of taking care of themselves now. They're educated and got their jobs and things, you know. But I used to say, well, I'm working to educate my kids, you know, but I can't. He said, you can't say that now. But I say, I work now because I wasn't trying to stay young. Because if you sit down and quit doing anything, well, you just get stiff, you know. So, of course, I use the money, too, because my grandkids need help. One of them with three children, he really needs help.
So you have great-grandchildren?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And he had to buy a house because he couldn't rent anything. And he bought up in Palmdale. I helped him to finance that. So, you know, to help them kill them. But I didn't give it to them because I don't want to make them lazy, you know. I just have to.
So in your acting career, so what would you say your goals are now?
Just to keep myself active and young. Because I notice people who sit down and don't do anything, they start deteriorating. So my goal now is to stay healthy and not get arthritis or any of these pains that you get from sitting around not doing anything. And, of course, I still need money to spend. Like, I want to take this trip to Barcelona in August to see my grandson run in the Junior Olympics. But back to the theater, grocery store. Yeah, we finished about that, I guess.
Uh-huh. One thing I wanted to ask you was, throughout your time in Los Angeles, have you been involved in politics?
Throughout my time, you say?
Yeah, just since the time that you've been here, have you been involved in politics?
Oh, well, a little bit, not too much. Like when I was working with the Women's Political Study Club, I was the junior president of that. And we worked to open up jobs for the colored kids, you know, who were qualified. Yeah, I worked very hard with them.
Did that club have a name?
Yeah, it was called the Women's Political Study Club.
Uh-huh.
And Betty Hill was the leader of it, and she was the one who started it. And I have some literature on that too. And then I was appointed to something. Let's see. Of course, I've always worked as an inspector for the election board. I still do that. And but politically, I used to work for the candidates, but no, I haven't done that lately.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Were you involved in the civil rights movement?
No.
What do you remember about it? Do you remember any local events during that time?
Well, like when Martin Luther King would come to town, I'd always make it my business to go and hear him speak.
Oh,
yeah. And whenever, like when Mayor Bradley was running for office, we used to give little coffee clashes for him to raise money, you know. Always helped and funds those kind of events. Helped to raise money for the candidates who were running. But I haven't done that lately. And the first, let's see. Well, he was a councilman first, wasn't he? Yeah. I knew Mayor Tom Bradley when he was a detective. He used to come in Maddox's office when I was selling real estate. He used to come in there all the time. And so I knew him then as a detective. Then when he started running for councilman, well, I used to work to help get him elected. And then when he ran for mayor, I helped to get him elected to mayor. And then I've always worked on the election boards, as I said before. And I still am the inspector for my election board. And I've had elections here. Huh?
What work does that involve?
Oh, when people come to vote on election day, you have to stand in and let them vote and register and vote and sign the book and give out the ballots and see that they vote properly and count the ballots when it's over, turn it in, take them, deliver them to the check-in center when it's over. But and I used to let them have the voting here at my house, but they only paid $25 for that. And I said, well, since utilities went up so high, I can't afford to do that anymore. They said, oh, you should think of that as your civic duty. I said, well, I've been doing that for years, my civic duty for years. And I think that's ridiculous.
So your house was a polling place?
Yeah, my house was a polling place, and I only paid $25 for the polling place. And I said, that's ridiculous. Well, how much do you want? I said, it should be at least $100. And they said, well, we have to get that okayed. We can't just say we'll give you that. And why don't you let us do it this time, then we'll get it later. I said, no, wait till you get it. So I refused to let them have it. And we have to go out of our precinct to vote because nobody would let them have their homes for $25.
What about local schools or churches or places?
Well, some places use the school, but right now we're using a senior citizen place on, let's see, Santa Rosalia, which is out of our precinct because that's the only place they could get. They're so cheap, they don't want to pay. And you spend more than $25 for utilities because you have to burn your lights all day, and you have to have the heat on in case it's cold weather, you know. And even if it isn't cold weather, you still got to burn your lights. Mm-hmm. And then you got to take a chance on people taking things out of your house. But I never had anything like that to happen, though.
One question I had for you was, how has Los Angeles changed or stayed the same since you've been here?
Oh, it's gotten larger. It's gotten too large, really. It's gotten much larger because, see, when I first came here, you had one house in the front and maybe a house in the rear. You didn't have all these apartments. And it was really called a big country town then because everybody had their own home, and then you could afford it. You know, you could afford your own home because the prices were cheap, you know, much cheaper. And people were more neighborly. And there weren't as many foreigners as there are now. The Mexicans have come in, and they really started this graffiti business, I think, because I don't remember seeing anything like that until the Mexicans started it. But now I think everybody's doing it, but I think the Mexicans are the ones who started it. Yeah, Los Angeles really, and then the drugs started coming in. We didn't have any drugs. I know my mother never locked her door. We didn't even have a key to the house because she didn't ever keep the door locked. And we weren't afraid either. But now you better not go out in your backyard and leave your door open. I knew a lady that was working in her backyard, she left her back door open. Not her front door, just the back door was open, and she left it open, working in her yard. And a guy sneaked in the back door when she wasn't looking and went in there and robbed the house. So it's just terrible. And then, too, I think there's too many people here that with illegitimate children, and they're not training them. The young mothers have all these children, and they're not getting much training because the little mothers are so young themselves. They don't
have
any.
The mothers have to work.
Yeah, and they don't have anybody to leave with. Because my cousin, she was a victim of that circumstances. She had two children, and she had to work out in service. And she got an old lady, to stay with her children while she's working. And this lady was so uncouth. She didn't have any training at all. And she just let the kids run the street, you know. She thought all was necessary to fix food for them and be there when they come in to eat. But she wasn't paying attention to what they were doing out in the street. And both of those children became drug addicts. And my cousin got killed young in an automobile accident and left those two kids. But they were grown when that happened, you know, like they were 18. And but neither one of them had turned out to be anything because they had gotten hooked on drugs. And so I figured that I was lucky because, you see, I had my parents to help me raise my son after my husband died. And then, too, I was a dedicated parent, and I didn't have to, I was fortunate enough to get the kind of job where I didn't have to stay away from home. My cousin hadn't been that fortunate. She hadn't bettered her condition because the only thing she knew was this domestic work, you see. So the jobs then, you had to live on the place, you know, and come home on Thursdays and Sundays. So that took her away from her children. So they didn't have the proper guidance. And that's the trouble now. The kids don't have any guidance, and the people that they can afford to have looking out at them, they don't know any better either. I don't care.
So, how has the African American community changed or stayed the same since you've been here?
Well, lots of the people have improved themselves by moving away from the East Side, as we called it. And because I remember when I lived on the East Side before I moved away, my next door neighbor, she was I call it lowbrow person, because she was jealous of me having a nice lawn. I'm on the East Side, but I'm still trying to have nice living conditions, you know. And so I had a gardener, and I kept up a lawn, and I watered my lawn. She didn't even have a lawn, but she was renting. She wasn't buying a house. She was renting. And I guess the rent was cheap, and so cheap that the owner didn't worry about having a lawn or a garden. But anyway, she lived there so long, I thought she owned the house. But she didn't have a lawn, and she was jealous of me having a lawn. And so one day I went out and picked up a whole stinky garbage can that had rolled over on my lawn. She wouldn't even put paper in her garbage can. It smelled. That's when you put the garbage out in the cans then. Her garbage can smelled because she would never wash it out, and she didn't put paper in it. Well, I put paper in mine, and then when the man would empty it, I'd rinse it out and put new paper in it. But hers, she never changed it. So one day hers had rolled over on my lawn when the man threw it after he emptied it. And I went out and picked it up and set it up in her yard. Boy, she cursed me out. Why don't you get your job working for the city if you want to go around picking up people's garbage cans? But I was expecting company, and I didn't want my company to smell that old stinky can. And she bawled me out, and that's when I found out she's jealous of me having a lawn. And so she never tried to improve herself at all, and so I got sick of her, and that's what made me want to move away. I said, the people don't want you to improve yourself. So I moved away and moved into a neighborhood where people took pride in their property. So those of us who wanted better things moved to the neighborhoods, and we tried to keep up with the neighborhood and do like the other neighbors. But a few moved into the nice neighborhoods and wouldn't try to keep up with the other neighbors. You know, they just going to start wrecking things. And so we'd get after them, you know, and then they'd get mad at us. Say, you think you're better than we are. I said, well, I do want to live better than you do. I said, I don't see, that doesn't make sense. You don't want to pick up your garbage can. You don't want to clean up your lawn and pick up your trash. But some people just aren't thoughtful enough about their surroundings, I guess.
What would you say have been the most important events in your life?
When I got that McDonald's commercial.
Really?
That was important.
How so?
Because I was seen all over the United States on TV. And I made big money out of it. And of course, well, when I built my new home, that was important. I was thrilled.
The
Redwood House. You know, when the restrictive covenant was broken. Oh, that was a thrill. Oh, boy. Let me see now. What else? And when I married Mr. Williams, because he was a good catch. He was a wealthy black man from St. Louis. He came out here, and as soon as he got out here, his wife that he'd been married to for 14 years divorced him. And
did she come out here too?
Yeah, they had moved out here. He and his wife and two children moved out here from St. Louis. Because his mother and father and sister and brother was already here. So he finally moved out to join them, brought his family. But they were getting along poorly, he said, before they got here. So when they got here, she put in a divorce and divorced him. And so I happened to meet him right after, 3 months after he separated from his wife. And so he was afraid to go out with me at first because he said, if I'm seen out with you, she'll be saying that I was slipping around with you before we separated. And so he was trying to protect me. So we would only go places like a theater. We wouldn't go in a place like I was invited to a party. He didn't want to do that at first because he said, I don't want you to get falsely accused because I really had just met him, you know. But he said she would be probably saying that he was slipping around with me before they separated if I was seen out with him right away, you know. So, but anyway, lots of other women were after him too because he was a good catch, you know. He was well established and had lots of property, and he was a former vice principal of a high school in St. Louis, and he had gotten on teaching out here, but he didn't like teaching. He wanted to be